Hey everyone, I'm Rob Stats Guerrera.
And I'm Michael Kist.
And you need to subscribe to the SB Nation NFL Show, SB Nation's daily NFL podcast that covers the National Football League from every angle.
On Mondays, we'll break down all the action and news from Sunday's games and hand out awards for special plays and performances.
On Tuesdays, we reset the state of the league, adjust our power rankings, and cover the biggest topics you need to hear about.
On Wednesday of the SB Nation NFL Show, we break down the game at a deeper level and analyze the best quarterback and defensive performances along with some of the best analysts in the industry.
On Thursday, we'll look ahead to the biggest games of the weekend and point you to key matchups to watch for.
And on Friday, you'll get all the tools you need to win big money with odds, betting lines, fantasy, and daily fantasy tips to prepare you for the week ahead.
So go search the SB Nation NFL Show on your favorite podcast app, subscribe now, and join us 5 days a week. The SB Nation NFL Show, SB Nation's daily NFL podcast you can't miss.
Batter up.
Hello, Amazing Avenue audio listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 68 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Serovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Kellyanne Healy. Hello, Kellyanne.
Hello, Allison. Hello, Linda.
Hello.
Sorry. I don't know why I do that seductive voice every time I intro.
I'm not complaining, really.
No, seriously, it's great. Kellyanne's had a few glasses of wine, everyone, so this should be a good podcast.
Oh, boy.
We're going to start with...
Really bad one.
We're going to start with the Mets segment. We haven't podcasted since the Mets signed James McCann, so that is probably the biggest Mets news on the docket. It's been the biggest signing that they've done this offseason, aside from Trevor May. Although, I mean, it's a bigger signing than Trevor May, but I would say they are kind of equivalent as far as, like, filling needs on the team and, like, constituting major signings. So they have their catcher. The Mets opted to not go for JT Realmuto. I don't think it was necessarily because of the price tag so much as Sandy Alderson kind of hinted at that he thought, and he's not entirely wrong here, that he thought that the JT Realmuto saga would drag out for most of the offseason. We'll see if that ultimately comes to pass. But that was kind of his thinking, was he didn't want to wait around to be the last bidder on JT Realmuto in the event that they lost out on him after a bidding war with other teams, and then they were kind of left with nothing because James McCann surely would have signed with someone else by then. So I think Sandy Alderson just really wanted to tick that box on the out. So I don't know. I'm supportive of this signing. I like it. Obviously, I would have liked to have JT Realmuto because catcher is the biggest hole on the roster and the best catcher in baseball was available. So it was kind of like, this is a no-brainer. But his logic about, it would have dragged out and then maybe we would have ended up with nothing makes a lot of sense, I think.
Like, I was fine with the signing when it happened. I was like, okay, cool, we got a catcher. But then his press conference, I was like, oh, hell yeah, we got a catcher.
His press conference was really good, I will say that.
It was. Like, I was ready to, like, run through a wall for him. And Stroman and, like, him have been tweeting back and forth. And I was like, oh, I love our online team. Like, it just adds, like, another layer to it, just seeing the other side of it. And, I don't know, like, Bradford, friend of the show Bradford, asked a question. I can't remember what it was, but I think it might have been about analytics.
And it was about looking at the card.
The wristband. Yeah. And he said he doesn't even use it. And I thought that was, like, that was my favorite response by him, that he's so prepared that he doesn't even need his wristband. He was like, I also want to rely on what I'm seeing. And so it seems like he's a good fit for, like, both, like, the analytics and also just, you know, game feel. And, you know, that was evident. I mean, he caught Giolito's no-hitter. Like, you know, he clearly works and is prepared, and I'm very confident that, and he already knows Mats. And he's already, like, worked out with Mats, which I think could be a huge, huge positive for this team if he can fix Mats.
Oh, yeah. That would
I definitely agree with that.
Imagine, 100%. Like, I do think that, and I'm not saying that JT Realmuto would not have done this, because obviously JT Realmuto is heralded as both a fantastic offensive and a fantastic defensive catcher. But James McCann has had notable improvements in his framing ability over the past season and a half or so, and he was able to speak articulately during the press conference on where those improvements are coming from and what actual tangible things he did to make those improvements, which is an indication that they are not a fluke, because the framing stats are not perfect and also take a pretty long time to stabilize. So it's hard to be like, just look at the framing numbers. He has like one season where he's a really good framer and you're like, I don't know about that. But he was able to speak on exactly what he did, which is really nice, especially at the bottom of the zone. Actually, it's a very similar tactic to what Wilson Ramos did, although Ramos was less successful at it, but as we all know. But he does the same thing that Ramos did toward the end of his Mets tenure, where he goes down on one knee. You'll see it. I'm sure you guys will all see it in the game. And if you've watched James McCann catch before, you've seen it. He goes down on one knee, and that lets him more effectively steal strikes at the bottom of the zone, which is really, really good to see. And I think, you know, prioritizing a guy like that that has those skills for this pitching staff will be really nice, because we've all seen Wilson Ramos over the past 2 years and how frustrating that's been. As much as I like loved Wilson Ramos as a guy, like, it was really frustrating to watch him behind the plate and watch him like straight up drop strikes from Jacob deGrom that then get called balls. It's like, hopefully that won't happen anymore.
Come on now. Behind the plate. It's like, come on now.
I can't remember where I saw it, but I wish I remember. But the Mets were in the bottom five in getting strikes called in the bottom of the zone.
Yes.
And so can you imagine Jacob deGrom, like, getting calls?
Imagine Jacob deGrom getting calls.
Getting the calls and being more elite than he already is.
I know, like, it's just like, can he get better? Really?
He probably can.
Yeah.
I love the McCann signing. Allison, I agree with you in that Sandy didn't want to, like, wait around for JT Realmuto, but I disagree with the fact that he is our biggest need. I think starting pitching is pitching in general is the biggest need at this point, just because our staff is so injury prone. We had a lot of issues this year due to the pandemic, with pitchers opting out or pitchers just completely not performing like Mats. So that is where I think our focus should go, or the team's focus should go next, personally. But I love the savviness of the McCann signing and kind of the foresight I think Sandy had in recognizing that Realmuto was going to be popular. They weren't necessarily going to be the winners, and going out and finding a great alternative for him. So,
yeah, for sure. I hope this works out. I mean, obviously, giving a guy like McCann, who I think will be good, don't get me wrong, I'm not down on him by any stretch of the imagination, but I think giving a guy like him who hasn't had the track record that JT Realmuto has had, a four-year deal does carry a bit of risk. I'm not saying that it's bad.
Yes, I agree.
Or that they shouldn't have done it. But it does, there is some risk there, so it'll be interesting to see how it works out. But I am optimistic.
I think it's a good risk.
Yeah.
I think it's a good risk.
Yeah.
I mean, and especially since he speaks so knowledgeably about his position and what he's done and working, he's had prior experience with some members of the staff. So, and I'm curious to see how he's going to work with the members that he hasn't worked with. I feel like just really want to see how he works with Jacob deGrom.
Yeah.
That's really all I'm waiting for.
Well, and even if his offense isn't real, because, you know, he got non-tendered, which he did speak which he did speak on too, about how, you know, that actually really helped him. And he said it again today. He did an interview with Marisol Castro, and he said, you know, having failed helps him because he can talk to other guys who are struggling and been like, hey, I've been there. I got non-tendered. It sucked. But even if the offense was a mirage or he got lucky, which, you know, doesn't seem to be because, again, he worked really hard at it and you can see he made changes to his stance. So it might be real, but, you know, even if he just brings, you know, like we said, if he can help the pitching staff, if he can throw runners out, if he can, you know, call a good game, you know, when's the last time the Mets had that? And you can find offense elsewhere. You can sign Springer. You can, you know, there's other options. So you can survive if he's just okay at the plate instead of, you know, what he was in 2019. I think he was an all-star. They just need him to be good defensively. And I think that's the most important thing.
I mean, and not I be think... Tomas Nito with the bat.
Yes.
No, I mean, but I think he can improve his batting just because the Mets were a very, oh my God, I can't remember if I'm completely BSing this right now, but the Mets were a very offensively productive team this past year. And granted, it's the pandemic, but say for Pete Alonso, Pete Alonso picked it up in the second part of the season.
It was really bad with runners in scoring position. That's what it came down
to. Yeah. Oh, it was
like
rough.
Really bad.
It was rough for a while there. But like, again, just going off a tangent for a second, it was like the best possible time, ironically and silver liningly, for him to have a sophomore slump in a shortened season that you can just put down to so many unique circumstances. And hopefully he'll turn it around this year. I have faith that he will.
Yeah. Because
he seems like another one like McCann who will rise from the failure. Which is something else I really like about McCann. I liked that character where, oh my God, I'm non-tendered, but I'm not going to be like agitated or depressed about it or let it get me down. I'm just going to work harder so another team will sign me. So, and he turned that into a 4-year deal. So good for him. I'm just really excited about him.
And I mean, his situation of being non-tendered and being on the brink of his major league career ending and turning things around is certainly not unprecedented. Like, we have players as heralded as JD Martinez, whose career is borderline over before he turned it around. So, you know, it can happen. That said, like Linda said, given the fact that the Mets are a pretty good offensive team as the roster is currently constructed, I am not super concerned about McCann needing to fill a need in the lineup. Although what I will say about that is that the Mets are heavily left-handed and he is right-handed, and so he is meant to in part balance the lineup in that way. But that is hopefully where George Springer will come in, or DJ LeMahieu, or whatever. As long as they sign one more big bat, then I'm far less concerned about what James McCann will produce at the plate than I am about his defensive skills. And yeah, the pitchers seem excited about throwing to him. I think it'll be interesting. I mean, obviously Noah Syndergaard is not going to start the season with the team. There was news that came out that Sandy said he expects him to be back around June is the current estimation. But obviously with Tommy John recoveries, you never know. Things can happen. He can be ahead of schedule or setbacks can happen. We'll see. But it'll be particularly interesting to see how Syndergaard takes to him, because we all know how Syndergaard has had some issues throwing to certain catchers in the past and has expressed, not to say that, like, I don't think he was necessarily in the wrong there, but like he has just expressed preferences, we'll say, and has not been shy about sharing them. Hopefully the pitching staff, at least Stroman seems really excited to throw to him. Hopefully the other pitchers feel the same way. So it'll be exciting to see.
Yes, quite.
But on the pitching front, as Kellyanne mentioned, starting pitching is another really big need for the Mets this offseason.
I'm really excited about this rumor that we're about to talk about.
I know. So we recently learned from Joel Sherman of The Post that the Mets are reportedly in on Tomoyuki Sugano, who is a Japanese pitcher, the best pitcher in Japan. Who was posted by the Giants, I think. He was on the... he was on the Yomiuri Giants. And he has won the equivalent in Japan of the Cy Young Award 2 times in Japan. So he is, like, widely considered to be the best pitcher in Japan. So he was posted, so he is now available to MLB teams to sign. And reportedly, according to Sherman, the Mets are in the running... or at least they've, like, talked to him. They have now been officially connected.
Sign him, Mets.
That would be sign so him great.
Sign him, Mets, please.
I was talking to a couple of people on Twitter about this. I think it was in response to a Vaz tweet about how it's been so long since the Mets have been, like, in on any international free agents. Like, whenever you heard... you know, like, anybody, whether it be Ohtani or Puig or Cespedes, it was always crickets from the Mets. And it shouldn't have been that way. Like, you're in the largest market in baseball. Like, why aren't you in on these guys? So it's just
because
nice that...
they were owned by the Wilpons.
Yeah, well, but so it's just a nice change of pace that, like, this is a real possibility? Wow.
No, I'm still getting used to the fact that we're not nickel and diming, or the Mets are not. I'm sorry, I keep saying we. This is what happens when I'm a little inebriated. That the team isn't nickel and diming at things anymore. I'm still getting used to that fact.
Yeah,
it's a reality, but it's just still so weird.
It's a and huge how... change. It's a huge change from the previous regime, and it's not just and it's not just because Steve Cohen is perhaps not being cheap. Finally, it's not just that. It's the fact that the Wilpons have this attitude where, you know, they tried in Kaz Matsui to dip their toe into the international market. That didn't end up working out for them, so they kind of just, like, shut themselves off to it because the Wilpon mentality was like, oh, this didn't work out for us the one time, so we're done with that forever. We're not doing these Japanese free agents anymore. But, like, so they really, after Kaz Matsui went poorly for them, they really stopped even, like, paying attention to that market. The Mets were never a factor, and it wasn't just because of money, although that was, you know, part of it. It was the fact that they had been burned once, so they just, instead of doing the smart thing
once.
And understanding that every player is different and these are a case-by-case basis sort of thing, they just decided that these things were not things that were going to work out for them. And they kind of just shut themselves off to it. So it's nice to have a new regime that doesn't have that, you know, past hanging over it to give these things a try, potentially. Now, obviously, we don't know to what extent the Mets are pursuing Sugano. This is just the very first rumor. But this would be fantastic news. I would be so happy if they signed him, because that would be a huge plus. If they could sign him and maybe, like, one other of the, like, second-tier free agent pitchers that are available, like an Odorizzi or a Tanaka or a Quintana, I would be very pleased with
I made a comment. I have to find it in the on Amazing, on the regular Amazing Avenue morning news. Let me find it.
Well, hang on. I also feel like this kind of goes with what Porter was saying in his introductory press conference. I can't remember. Did we cover that? Did that happen? I don't know.
We did true.
Cover that. Oh,
we hired a GM, everyone.
Yeah,
I didn't even put that in the show notes.
Throw that in the show notes last minute.
But he seemed pretty I don't want to say adamant, but he was, I don't even know what, like, I've had wine too. but he was talking about the pitching and how you need quality starters. Like, admit it goes beyond your starting five and you need like quality, like 6-7 starters. So I feel like maybe he was hinting at this.
Yeah, I mean, Jared Porter and Sandy Alderson were certainly talking like guys who weren't necessarily interested in Lugo being the fifth starter, that's for sure, which is good. It's a good
thing. They don't want, like, let's just throw guys out there and see what happens, like a Rick Porcello, and, like, hope he's okay. They seem to actually want, like, quality arms that they could rely on. Again, like the Dodgers model, they keep going back to the Dodgers. And I mean, and the Dodgers had, you know, they had Kershaw, they had Bueller, like they could just keep throwing guys at you and look at where it got them. And so, you know, you're going to need, Stroman and Jake are a good 1-2 punch, but you need guys beyond them. And especially with the Braves, if you want to go toe-to-toe with the Braves, their pitching staff is really freaking good and really young, so they're going to be good for a while. The Mets need to find pitching somewhere that isn't he who must not be named.
Yes.
Yes, so here was my comment on, this is from, wait a minute, December 19th. It was the first comment in the morning news. I said that I loved the Cam Opp signing, the minor league signing, mostly just because he's British. I got a kick out of that. But then I said we should get Tomoyuki Sugano, Masahiro Tanaka, Jake Odorizzi. And I went like really banana saying we should get one other major league starting pitcher. And don't worry, I will address that because somebody commented you're rolling with a 7-man rotation.
You need them.
But yeah. I was like, you need this depth. And then I said, get 3 pitchers that can be signed to a minor league contracts with invites to spring training and major league bonuses, like Jared Eichhoff.
Jared Eichhoff.
So if you could get like 1 or 2 more pitchers like that, since we don't know, I like him up, but we really don't know how he's going to perform yet. But who did I say? I did go later in that thread, Kluber? To say, I think Zach Godley. Oh yeah. Someone said Kluber. I did not. Urania was another one. Chris Archer was a suggestion. I personally am wary of him just because of his shoulder issues.
Yeah. He's got Matt Harvey screaming all over him.
Yeah. He might be done. So
that breaks my heart personally, cause I like Archer. Quintana is mentioned. Walker's mentioned.
Yeah, Walker, but I think I would take a chance.
Oh, yeah. Walker would be a really interesting, like, kind of flyer pick.
I agree.
Although, Bill Castillo might be available in a trade. But
that would cost.
That would be
so much. And I would not be, like, personally, if I was Sandy Alderson, which I'm not. Caveat disclaimer, I'm not. I would not pay whatever price he was asking for that, because it's going to be a lot.
Yeah, like,
and
I mean,
we don't have any prospects to begin with.
I mean, like,
we'll
see how it develops, because obviously they're portraying desperation, so they don't necessarily have leverage here in these situations with these trades that they want to make. But that said, as of right now, the price is rumored to be quite high, and the Mets don't really have the prospect capital to.
And Sandy has even said he doesn't seem to want to deplete the farm system anymore. So,
well, I was gonna say there's not much of a farm system to begin with.
I mean, so I don't think he's gonna go that route.
I mean, the only way I could see the Mets going that route for any of these guys, not just Castillo, like Arenado, Lindor as well, the only way I could see any of those happening is if they sign someone like, if they end up with Springer or LeMahieu or one of the other major free agents, and then they're able to trade from the major league roster.
Yeah.
and make that the centerpiece of the deal. But absent that, I don't
people see not named JD Davis.
I know, but like that's the. I won't lie on the AA comments, like that's the first name that comes up in trade discussions, which is Sandy, really frustrating.
Yeah, Sandy has mentioned him twice as their third baseman. He said they have depth at third. Okay, so I'm going to take that and roll with it. Sandy's being very defensive of him, so that makes me feel a little better.
SB Nation presents the SB Nation NFL Show. 5 weekday episodes to get you through the grind of the NFL season with your favorite SB Nation community leaders. You'll get reactions to what happened on Sunday, film breakdowns, fearless takes, local expert analysis, fantasy football advice, and so much more. There's a little something for everyone on the SB Nation NFL Show. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app to be sure you don't miss a single episode.
On the positional player front, there are kind of two like small rumors right now. There's no like there's no major Springer news since the last time we talked.
Let's
like
do it.
The Mets are still in on him. They keep being connected to him. All the like talking heads keep saying the Mets are, you know, connected to him.
But no Springer news has sprung up.
The Mets they haven't used those buzzwords they always use when signings are about to happen, like intensifying. Like they haven't used like those sorts of words yet. But there was like a small nugget of reporting from Jeff Passan of ESPN and in one of his like subscriber only articles that said that the Mets are rumored to be one of the two favorites for him still along with the Blue Jays, but no one's actually like said it, nothing seems remotely imminent at this time.
I don't understand what the issue is. Like, Springer wants money, and the Mets have money.
Yeah, just throw him the goddamn bag. Like, what are we waiting for? Like, just give him whatever money he wants. Like, I don't care. Like, come on, man. But we did just hear...
The Blue Jays would be embarrassing.
Yeah, that would be embarrassing. We did just hear shortly before the pod earlier today that we heard like a very, very light DJ LeMahieu rumor. I'll put it that way. A light rumor. It was something just like the Mets have reached out to him and like one of those ones that like, but I think it was Jeff Paternostro said this was clearly leaked by his agent. Like one of those, like maybe the Mets texted him. But now of course, like because it's the New York media, it's like, Mets and Yankees gonna war over DJ LeMahieu. It's like, I don't know, man.
But I mean, maybe. I think that's leverage. I think that's just leverage for discussions with the Yankees.
Yeah, absolutely. The Mets are being leveraged.
That's all I think that is. I don't think there's any truth to that rumor or any like substance to that other than, hey, they did their due diligence in calling him and just seeing and then being like, okay, that's it.
Well, it's like, you know, you broke up with your ex, and then now you're like, hey, I'm with this, like, hot new, like...
Hey, girl.
...team. Like, I'm interested in this hot new team. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, exactly. Just, like, get a pay a model to show your ex their Instagram pics.
Which, I won't lie, I like the fact that the Mets have become, like, this desirable destination team.
They're the hot model.
It's just right now, I know it's in kind of the honeymoon stage, but I like the fact that, hey, players want to come here and the general tone and tenor around the team is just so positive right now.
I mean, Steve Cohen has directly led to both McCann and Stroman being on this team right now.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
Because both of them have specifically mentioned him. So, yes. I mean, granted, Cohen hasn't really done anything yet, but
the even effect like is real. Even Syndergaard said it would be like, I think he said it, like it will be nice to have an owner that treats the players like actual people.
Yeah.
I think he was the one that said that.
Yes.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, he tweeted.
Wait, I gotta find that tweet now.
It was a fire tweet, not gonna lie. I mean,
oh, I miss Noah like, so much.
So yeah, has Steve Cohen actually done all that much yet? No, but I wrote an article about this recently for Amazing Avenue, and like, not to like, you know, derail the entire conversation too much, but I think it deserves a mention, is that alongside, so it was kind of a flurry of activity, like all within the span of like 24 to 48 hours, they signed McCann and they hired Jared Porter. And then the thing that got kind of lost in the shuffle, because it wasn't nearly as big of a news item as those other two things, is that there was like an event at Citi Field for season ticket holders, and Steve Cohen showed up in person with his wife himself to hand out like giveaways, because they were handing them out like bobbleheads and stuff like that. But the fans did not expect Cohen there. That was like a surprise. And so he just like, you know, like the season ticket holders like rolled up to Citi Field in their car. And there's like Steve Cohen with a Mets logo mask on, like handing them bobbleheads. And like, yeah, is that like a major news item? No. But is it symbolic? Yes, I think it is. I think it's a complete change in tone from the previous regime to make yourself accessible to fans the way he has. He's already made himself more available to the fans than the Wilpons did in their entire tenure.
And he's doing a Q&A with Howie Rose, I think, tomorrow.
Yeah, like what?
He's still keeping up with it. It's not for like, granted, we're still in the honeymoon phase, but you know, he hasn't strayed from it. And
I used that exact phrase in the article window. The honeymoon phase.
I just hope this doesn't come back to like bite him somehow. I don't know. Because I'm still very wary of his background. But I'll roll with the positive vibes right now. But here's the tweet. I kind of misquoted it a little bit. Noah Syndergaard tells the Post, "All I plead is that the new owner treats players and personnel in the organization like people and less like expendable commodities. That being said, I couldn't be more excited having the real-life Bobby Axelrod leading the charge. And for those of you that may not have access to Showtime or watch the show, Bobby Axelrod is the main character in Billions, who Steve Cohen inspired, pretty much.
So didn't he change his Twitter bio, too, to like include Cohen?
Oh yeah, Syndergaard. Yeah, he did. It was like It was like a bit. He changed it to like, oh, what was it?
Dear Steve Cohen, hi, I'm Noah. Some people call me Thor. I'm a Met working out in Florida, and I just want to win for Mets fans just like you.
That's very cool. Yeah. So I mean,
oh
like,
my god,
I've really missed Noah. I'm not gonna lie.
Me too.
Wait a minute. Oh my, can I just say, when Steve Cohen tweeted, "Let's take a vote, Carvel or black jerseys," and Noah Syndergaard apparently tweeted back, "Neither, play shirtless.
Yeah,
and amazing. Then him and Jerry Blevins went back and forth, because then Blevins said not in April.
And then he was like, "You again."
And then he goes, "You missed me."
I was going to say, can I just say, I am like thrilled with the Jerry Blevins minor league.
Yeah, the Mets signed Jerry Blevins to a minor league deal, everyone. And this podcast
I hope he breaks with the major league roster.
Yes. I do too.
I want him to break camp with the major league team.
Positively verklempt about that whole situation.
We love Jerry. This is a pro Jerry Blevins podcast.
This is a pro Jerry Blevins podcast. Yeah, so I guess the final Mets item that I didn't write in the show notes because I'm a gigantic failure is that the Mets did hire a GM. Jared Porter.
He's just tired. We're busy.
Which, you know, so I won't claim to be an expert on these things. I am not one that has like super like strong takes about GM candidates, about the front office, not because I don't care, but just because I don't feel like I know enough to have really strong takes on it. But I will say that people who are much smarter than me have said that Jared Porter is widely considered to be kind of the hottest GM candidate who did not already have that title or higher. So like of the folks who didn't already have like a president of baseball ops title or something like that, he is widely considered to be one of the best options. So, you know, I'll take the word of people who are much smarter than me on that. I like Linda said, his introductory presser was good, just like McCann's was. So, like, I don't know. I'm happy.
He's
not a car salesman, freaking player agent, so.
That's right. I think I said this in Slack. I was like, he doesn't have any of Brody's charm, but I don't think that's a bad thing.
Right.
Like, he just pulls, like, from, like, knowledge, not, like, I have to dress this up and make it sound good.
And, see, like, it's very much Brody's Sandy's charm guiding hand with him there, you know.
See, Brody's charm to me was not really charm. It was smarminess. And one really shallow kind of, not shallow, but superficial kind of thing I liked about Jared Porter was that he kept his head level with the laptop he was zooming on. It's such a weird thing, but it's a detail I immediately noticed just because I get very frustrated when I see people looking down to the computer and their necks are down. And he didn't. He had his laptop level with him, like he wanted to talk directly to us. Like, so me, really shallow note that put him, that was a big plus in my column for him.
My shallow note was, it was so glaring to see, like, when they would cut from Sandy to him. Like, Sandy had, like, these, like, little tchotchkes.
Oh, my God, oh, my God.
Yeah, and,
I
like, the
Sandy.
Evil, like, elf behind him that was, like, about to, like, kill somebody. And, like, the grandma's, like, plates. And
I was like, these dolls are going to straight up give me nightmares, man. What are you doing out here?
Like, they could have killed somebody.
It was so trollish. I love it.
But then it would cut to Porter, and he has, like, this modern living room. Like, everything's white and, like,
it's very sleek
and like, a huge TV on the back. it was just kind of symbolic of their front office right now. Like, the old school and the new school. And with evil elves thrown in.
I forget who tweeted it. I think it might have been Rich. But he tweeted a picture of Jared Porter and was like, he has extremely, like, little league dad standing on the third baseline energy, and I completely agree with that.
Yeah, I agree with that too.
Yeah,
like wearing the Under Armour hoodie and like and the golf sunglasses, like.
But also now that Sandy is back with the Mets, I want to see him. I want to see his Twitter account reactivated.
Yeah,
I know, that'd be great. At Mets,
he's going to have to change the handle.
Yeah, no, and I think it's actually going to be better, and because he is Sandy Unleashed now.
Yes,
pretty much.
It was on, like, Mets Hot Stove or something, and they asked him, has he spoken to Michael Conforto about a possible extension? And
yes,
he was
please.
Like, and he was like, well, you know how Boris is. And he was like, you know, we'll have discussions. And he goes, and hopefully those will go beyond food metaphors.
Oh, my God. I love him so much.
Like, way to go, Sandy.
I love him so freaking much.
I was like, just to get that, like, little jab in there to Boris. It's like, oh, thank you, Sandy.
Oh, my God. I love him so much.
Yep. And, like, it's, like I said before, it's clear that, like, Jared Porter is here under the guidance of Sandy Alderson, and he is kind of being, you know, like, being coached to eventually move up to be, like, more of a president of baseball operations sort of situation. So we shall see how that works out. But Porter has a great reputation in baseball, and so, you know, that's good enough for me.
Well, that was the thing too. Everybody was talking about, like, the Phillies and hiring Sam Fuld, but this Mets job was, you know, much more attractive because, you know, Sandy's not going to be here forever. And
yeah, you know you're going to be in his job.
You're
going to
move up.
Years. Yeah.
So, yeah, the Phillies, I don't know, could guarantee that, like, the Mets could.
Yeah, I mean, Dombrowski, they hired Dombrowski, and he's gonna be there for a long time, probably.
Yeah.
I think the whole big thing, though, is that whoever the front office staff may be, they're going to have more autonomy in this regime than during than they did under the previous owners.
Well, Sandy, which certainly I think, will. I'm not sure. I don't know how much autonomy Porter will have when it comes to reporting to Sandy, but we'll see.
I don't know. I mean, we can't say. We can only speculate. And I'm going to just speculate that, I mean, he's obviously going to need guidance and he's obviously going to be coached and mentored. But I think he still will have some freedom into trades, trade discussions, and what goes on with the team, rather than having to run through the owners to approve everything.
And I do think Sandy's at the stage of his career where he's like, I don't need to be in the weeds on this stuff anymore.
Yeah. But, like, let's say the Mets sign Springer. Who gets the credit? Is it Porter? Is it Sandy? Is it Colin? Like, who did it?
I think it's all of them.
All of the above.
Yeah.
I think it's a little Colin A, a little Colin B, a little Colin C.
It's a team effort. It's a team effort.
But, yeah, we'll see what happens with the rest of the Mets offseason moving forward. But they have a catcher. But
it's just, it's exciting that we have a winter season where we can make all this speculation and have this to talk about.
Yeah.
Because in seasons past, we didn't do this.
No, it's been quite a long time. Probably, like, what, since they signed Beltran?
Oh my god, that's such a long time!
Granderson.
Grandy. Like
was a good, yeah.
Cespedes, well, like, when they re-signed Cespedes.
Yeah. But, like, never, like,
but those were
all these things at once.
Once, yeah. It was only, like, one of these deals at a time. Like Granderson in 2014, Cespedes after 2015. It was never like, oh, we're going to get a Springer. Oh, we're going to sign pitchers too. Oh, we're going to do a catcher too. So they're doing all of these things kind of in a way that will positively, hopefully, affect the major league roster. And if they sign some more pitchers for the minor league, we'll shore up some depth in the minor league system, which is sorely lacking right now.
Yep. Agree. So we will move on to our baseball segment. We have a couple
of... And I will take another sip of my wine.
Excellent. And we have a couple of major items to cover across baseball that have happened in the past couple weeks. The first one being that the Cleveland baseball team, as I am now calling them for the time being, is changing its name. So obviously...
Bad time.
Although, I kind of wonder if they, like, it makes me think of Prince and changing his name to a symbol. I wonder if Cleveland will just change their name to a symbol, and then it'll be, like, the artist formerly known as the Indians.
No, they'll change their name to, like, the Chief Wahoo symbol. That's out of touch they are.
Freaking, yeah. Anyway, so, but they are long overdue, finally changing their name. They had kind of, you know... They kind of hinted at this because they had gotten rid of the Chief Wahoo imagery before this and changed, like, their hats back to just, like, the Block C. Obviously, plenty of the fans are still wearing Chief Wahoo stuff. And some of them are even showing up in full, you know, tribal garb.
Oh, lovely.
To the stadium, which I hope that they do a better job at, like, cracking down on in the future, because you know it's going to keep happening. It's going to be even worse now. People are going to show up in full on freaking red face to the goddamn stadium. And I hope that they just don't let them in. They could just be like, you can leave now. Thanks.
Turn around, go home.
Yeah. So they're finally changing their like racist imagery and racist team name, which is great. Who knows what they'll change it to. They're like, I don't understand how you could watch the Washington football team, as they are now known, go through this and not... And not, like, you know, learn from it at all. Because the Washington football team was like, we are changing our name. We don't know what it's going to be yet. Right now, we're just the Washington football team. And Cleveland did the exact same thing. They were like, we don't have a name ready. It's like, how do you announce a name change if you don't have a new name ready?
Well, it didn't they say they were kind of contemplating, like, the tribe or something? It's like, no.
No, like, pivot completely away.
I thought they were contemplating their former name, the Spiders. That's what I heard.
No, but yeah,
that's
but
more fans want that. I've seen a lot of fans want that.
Yeah, the fans want that. But Dolan came out and said they were considering, like, try, but after he thought about it, he decided it was a bad idea.
I keep forgetting he owns that team and then remembering and laughing.
Yeah, like, the whole Dolan family is just, like, awful people. Because he's cousins with the infamous James Dolan, who owns the Knicks
and the Knicks and Rangers.
Oh dear.
So yeah, I mean, like, good. It's way overdue, but again, completely bungling it.
And they were going to donate money, like, from their they were going to donate money from something, but it's like they don't want the money from, like, they don't want no, like, proceeds from racist caricatures.
Right. Right. Exactly. It's like, just change your name and shut up about it.
Yeah. And like, move on. And the Braves, hello.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You next, assholes.
I think the two teams that have Native American names, which I'm not Native American, but Indians always has bothered me as an Italian, just because it was an Italian who didn't know that he didn't get to India, and then call the people
basically a dumbass.
Yes,
like, let's be real.
And
among,
like,
other things.
YouTube video of the Sopranos episode about Columbus. Anyway,
and I was gonna say, and if you guys really want to celebrate in Italian, how about the guy that has two continents named after him, Amerigo Vespucci? So, yeah, I have many thoughts and feelings on Columbus, but that said, I'm getting off tangent. Of the two baseball teams that have Native American names, to me, I find the Braves much more offensive, if that's the right word, or problematic. I think that's a better word, problematic. Just because of the connotations of the name, B, the culture that has built from it, like the tomahawk chop. Oh my god, I can't stand the chop.
Yeah, mostly just get rid of the chop.
Chop, which they admitted was wrong when they wouldn't play it for when Flaherty was pitching. So it's like, you know it's wrong, but apparently it was only wrong, like, when Flaherty was in the game, but other times it was acceptable.
It was fine.
I don't think there's as much, like, public outcry for the Braves to change their name, although, like, I don't think people would complain if they did. I think that they should, but I don't think there's as much really strong outcry for them to change their name as there is for the Indians, just because not only is the Indians' name racist, it's also, like, a complete misnomer, as Kellyanne is pointing out. And Chief Wahoo is, like, a very racist caricature, as is the Chop, but, like, the Braves don't have a logo like that that has a completely, like, red-faced Indian, like, mascot. But they should still get rid of the chop. At least get rid of the chop. It's atrocious.
Which is a complaint. Yeah, which is a complaint that many, well, at least many Mets fans have had over the years.
Being at that stadium is horrible because of it. And I can speak from experience. It's a terrible stadium experience because you're just like, it's so loud. They play it for everything. And it's the worst. It's the worst. I hate going there. I've been there a few times. My aunt lives in Atlanta, and so I've been to a few Braves games, and it's just horrible because of the chop. It sucks. Get rid of the chop. But, like,
and it's not even, like, we've mentioned this before, it's not even unique to them.
No.
Like, no.
A college team does it. The Chiefs do it. So it's, like, not even yours.
Wait, which college team does it? Is it Florida?
Might be. Is it the Seminoles?
Yeah, that's Florida. Yeah, that's, I think, Florida State. Wait, let me check. Because Florida,
I'm
the
so
Gators.
Bad with colleges.
I know. I like, especially when they're known for college football.
Well, because yeah, I just have Florida. No interest in college sports, so
it's Florida State, the Florida State Seminoles.
Okay.
Which I think there was an argument in the comments on AA about that today, too, that we had to hide.
Oh, God.
But
it's not hard. Just do the right thing.
Yeah.
Like, well, I guess it is hard for some people.
And they
people,
issued, but... like, and it was one of those other, it's another thing where, that, like, they, right after they, like, announced the name change, they, like, issued that statement about, yes! like, the best path forward. And again, it was just, like, so, like, these team statements are almost universally bad all the time. Like, who writes these?
They're shallow.
They're shallow and bad and don't actually address the issue. And it's just, like, just change the name and shut up and move on.
I mean, but I think that's how the majority of fans are. They're very superficial and don't go into depth about things. And I think we're going to see that when we talk about our next thing, but I won't get into that yet. But I don't know many sports fans in general, other than, you know, our little bubble at Amazing Avenue, that really take the time to go in depth and analyze like the social effect on a macro level that we do. It's just very shallow. It's hey, what can you do for me? Are you winning? Are you losing? And that's it.
When people get so tied up with their teams, it becomes their identity. And then, like, they take it as like a personal attack. Like, how dare you? Like, say this is wrong. Like, they can't see beyond that it's theirs. And
yes,
so it's like selfishness is just tied into it. And like,
agree.
You know, take a look outside yourself and just, you know, your own worldview.
And I think that's like exactly it. People don't. I'm good. This might be like a bit of a controversial statement, but I feel like Americans in particular don't take the time to look behind, but beyond themselves often in many aspects of society. And I will leave it at that.
I think that's all that needs to be said.
Inebriated Thoughts by Kellyanne.
I would buy that book.
Inebriated Introspection.
Ugh, am I going to show my age if I say Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy?
No. But then again, maybe I'm showing my age in that I don't think you're showing your age. Oh my God, I don't even know if that makes sense.
Oh, can I title the podcast Inebriated Thoughts?
Yes, please. Inebriated Introspections. Can't go for the alliteration.
By Jack Handy.
You can't say that. I just took another sip. Oh my God.
Okay. So the other topic that we have to cover today, and we are going to specifically shout a couple of specific pieces, and there are more out there. This is not a comprehensive list, but this is a place where you should absolutely read these articles and listen to Black voices on this. But the other major news that happened in baseball this week is that Major League Baseball, and I put major air quotes around this, recognized the Negro Leagues as a major league, as like sort of quote equivalent to Major League Baseball, and therefore, for, you know, on the surface meaning, it means that they are incorporating like Negro League stats into historical records and kind of putting them on, again, air quotes, equal standing with Major League Baseball stats and historical records. But you know, the reaction to this was decidedly mixed, I guess is the best way I could put it. Again, you should specifically listen to Black writers on this. We have, and we will put these pieces in the show notes and in the tweets for this episode. But I do want to share like a couple of choice quotes from a couple of these pieces. Howard Bryant of ESPN wrote a really good piece about this. And the title of the piece is, MLB can add Negro Leagues to official records but can never change what it did to Black players, basically emphasizing like you can't erase the history that was already there and just pat yourselves on the back because you did this. And so he writes in that piece, the decision was met with great applause, but in addition to being reconciliatory, it was always a spectacular display of historical distortion and institutional arrogance. So basically saying, not only are you trying to rewrite history here and exercising revisionist history, you're also, like, MLB is so full of itself. Like, and he writes later in the piece, they didn't need baseball's validation to be special. They, meaning the Negro Leagues. Like, it's the arrogance of Major League Baseball to think, oh, we need to recognize you for you to be equal. You know, it's kind of, it's a slap in the face. It's a slap in the face. Like, I understand the symbolic significance of including these records and, you know, that should be, but to say that, oh, you guys are equal now because we, Major League Baseball, say so, and we are the arbiter of, like, what constitutes legitimate baseball leagues. Like, screw you. Like, come on now. And I'll read some more quotes. Clinton Yates of The Undefeated wrote an absolutely fantastic piece on this that you guys should read. The title of that piece is, and I'm flipping back to my other screen again, excuse me, MLB elevating the status of Negro Leagues is the problem, not the solution. And subtitle is, Black Baseball is not less than and will never be. So it's kind of the point, the same sort of theme, saying Major League Baseball doesn't need to recognize the Negro Leagues for it to be a legitimate and equal baseball league. He wrote, there's a phrase coined likely by some old white guy that goes, winners write the history books. In the case of Major League Baseball, not only do they write the history books, but apparently they decide when everyone else's histories are legitimate too. And he goes on to say, of all the nonsense that the most duplicitously conservative sports league in the history of the United States and of America has ever pulled, this might be the most ridiculous piece of soft supremacy we've ever seen. This announcement says, be grateful, we now view you as whole. Newsflash, that's the problem, not the solution. So again, the fact that Major League Baseball feels that the Negro Leagues needs its stamp of approval in order to be considered legitimate is pretty ridiculous. The Negro Leagues are their own thing entirely and are special on their own and should be considered something different and special without Major League Baseball saying that they are equal to Major League Baseball.
And I read one article, damn it, I can't remember which one it was, where they said, you know, you do this, but it's basically performative because they don't encourage, like, Black culture in the sport. Like, you know, Tim Anderson bat flips and gets, you know, yelled at for it. So it's like, you're just doing this, what, to save face? Or, you know, just to, you know, because it's, you know, I don't want to say the it thing to do, but, you know, I don't think they never would have even considered it if there hadn't been so many, you know, protests and things and baseball, you know, taking a stand. But that came from the players. And baseball's done nothing to encourage the players taking a stand and, and Brody, God bless him, the one thing he did right was getting caught on the hot mic saying they don't get it. And they don't. And it's sad that, you know, it's if Black baseball players don't feel encouraged or welcomed in today's game, then what is this? What changes for them? Like, yeah, it's fine, like, for the history books, but it's still, you still have so much work to do in today's game.
And, like, what are you doing to remedy these past injuries that you've inflicted upon this community? Like, what are you actually doing?
No, nothing, basically.
Right. So, like, they're trying to make themselves to be, like, the good guy now when they've been the bad guy for so long. And it's just, it doesn't sit right with people, and nor should it.
Like, encourage more Black baseball players to get involved in the game. Why is there so few involved in the game? Encourage those who are in the game. Don't, like, shame them when they bat flip. Let them, you know, embrace their culture and be who they are. And until that happens...
I was going to say, I was trying to interject and I totally didn't realize I had my mic muted.
Oh no.
Muted for a second. Oh my God. But I was going to say, it goes back to what I was saying in that last part where it's just a very superficial gesture for people that don't want to go in depth to their sport.
It's the easy thing to do.
It's the easy thing to do. That said, a very, very thin silver lining is that hopefully it will make people go and research the Negro Leagues. Or like, I went into my favorite bookstore over the weekend and saw a display that had a lot of prominent Negro League books. So hopefully it will inspire people educating themselves more and seeing, just in particular for me, the literature, the body of literature that is out there, because there is a significant amount for all ages. And I think it's quite wonderful personally that there is so much literature available to pull from. So I think I've mentioned this before, but I'm a children's librarian, so like there are, particularly for children's books, there's so much information that you can learn, and it's a very easy way to learn it. A lot of adults like say, oh, I don't want to read children's books, but like it's really a great like introduction to things that someone may not understand. And it's very accessible and it's in language that people should be able to comprehend. So, and I did list a few books in our show notes. I added them last minute. So
yes,
maybe we can post that. Maybe we can post that on Twitter later. They are all by Black authors except for, which one? The Soul of Baseball, but that is from one of the sports writers in conjunction with the player. So yes,
yeah.
And I'll quickly mention those titles. It's the Negro Baseball Leagues: The Tales of Umpiring, Legendary Players, Breaking Barriers, and Making American History by Bob Motley, who was an umpire in the Negro Leagues. Unfortunately, he passed away in 2017. I think at the age of 94. The next one is Curveball, the remarkable story of Toni Stone, the first woman to play professional baseball in the Negro Leagues, which I think that's particularly significant because the Negro Leagues showed its own open-mindedness and progressiveness in allowing women into the sport in the first place, something which MLB has yet to do. So that's that one. And then there's The Soul of Baseball, A Road Trip Through Buck O'Neill's America by Joe Posnanski. And the last two are children's books. One's for middle grade called We Are the Ship by Kadir Nelson. And the last one is a children's book called Mamie on the Mound, A Woman in Baseball's Negro Leagues. So there you have two women already mentioned versus the zero in Major League Baseball. Just to point that out really quick. I found that detail particularly interesting.
Yeah.
When researching books on the Negro Leagues.
Yep. So you should definitely read those pieces that I mentioned, and you should read those books, and you should read Black voices on all of this. And it's not just, you know, it's like we were saying, it's not just everything we've been talking about on this podcast with the Negro Leagues. It's the fact that MLB is displaying this arrogance when there's still significant there's still significant barriers
and significant racism
to Black communities participating in baseball that is resulting in a steady decline in the number of Black players in the game. Shakia Taylor recently wrote about this for Yahoo Sports, and I'll link that in the show notes also about the barriers that remain to young Black baseball players getting into the game and getting. She talked to Joe Adell for that piece, among others. So that is also a really great piece that I think, you know, is relevant to this because it's showing that, you know, Major League Baseball is still not living up to what it should be, and yet it has the arrogance to say whether the Negro Leagues are legitimate. No. You know, walk the walk before you do that.
Please.
Like, it's ridiculous. But yeah, you guys should be reading those pieces. There's so many other voices out there that like we haven't mentioned that you should be reading. Of course, friend of the pod, Bradford William Davis, always has insightful thoughts on all of this. Andrea Williams is a fantastic follow on Twitter. You should follow her. She's also has a she has a book coming out in January 2021 as well called Baseball's Leading Lady about Effa Manley, which I am very excited Ooh. About. So yeah, add that to the reading list. And she's a fantastic writer, and she tweeted a lot of thoughts on this as well. So just there's a lot of voices out there that you should be following on this more than us. But suffice it to say that it deserved a mention on the pod, and you know, people. I mean, because
we have a platform to mention it, and we want to make people aware of it. Even though we don't necessarily, we can't speak on experience of a black baseball player, of a black person, because we're all white.
Yep.
So, but we do have the ability to provide the resources where you can learn about that, and I think that's a good thing. I would like to think that's a good thing.
Yes. Yeah, and like we said, just do your research, read, and listen.
Read. That's the big thing. Read.
Yes.
Reading is good.
We are a pro reading podcast.
We are indeed
very pro reading.
You have two librarians on this podcast. Of course, we're pro reading.
So we will again finish the show this week, like we always do, with Walk Off Wins, a special holiday edition of Walk Off Wins, since this will be hitting your feeds 2 days before Christmas. Where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week. Baseball related or otherwise. Linda Surovich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win, well, I ordered Insomnia cookies. This is a little bit of an adventure.
Yay!
I ordered Insomnia cookies.
We're not going to tell you why she ordered them.
No. And for some reason, FedEx just does not like my new address because it has a dash in it, and they always say it isn't real, and so they weren't accepting my address. And so I ordered it, and I realized they didn't recognize the dash. So then I chatted with them and told them to change the address to my parents' house and I'll pick up the cookies there. They said sure, you'll get another confirmation, which I did. My mom texted me and like the next day saying cookies are here. Great. Fantastic. Got my cookies. But then the day after that, three more boxes of cookies show up at my original address. And I only ordered one box, so I have no clue where these three boxes came from. That was never part of the plan. That was never in the original order. I don't know. I was like, I don't need three boxes of cookies. So coming back around to that, I finally got my furniture on.
Yay!
Furniture that I ordered back in September. I was like, this better be the nicest furniture I've ever seen in my entire life, considering how long it took to come in. And so the guys were here. They were delivering it. And I was like, you know what? I don't need these cookies. So I'm like, hey, guys, I have cookies. Do you want a box? And they were like, oh, yeah, sure. I was like, I promise you, these are like the best cookies I've ever had. I did tip them too. I didn't just give them cookies as a tip. I want to make
in
that
lieu
clear.
Of a tip.
I'm not that cheap. So they're like, oh, yeah, great. Thanks. You know, and they left. And then they come back and I was like, oh, did you forget something? And they're like, we have a love seat. I was like, what? And they're like, yeah, do you want it? I was like, what? And so they're like, yeah, the previous people didn't want, we're getting rid of it. And they're like, you know, it's in good condition. They're like, do you want it? I was like, okay, free love seat. So, and I have a spare bedroom that had like nothing in it. So I was like, okay, sure, I'll put it in the spare bedroom. So somehow, a free box. I got three free boxes of cookies and a free love seat in the span of like 2 days.
Amazing!
That's fantastic.
So I was like, you know, stuff like that, like, never happens to me. And, like, it was, you know, it also just be nice to people this time of year. Like, they're working hard. I feel bad for these guys. Maddie, my cat, would not leave them alone while they were trying to set up my furniture. And so it's like, you know, be nice to, like, your delivery guys, your postal workers, and, you know, just a nice thing to do.
Your retail workers, your janitors.
Yeah. The people who are, like, especially this year, the essential workers.
Yeah.
The postal service is absolutely slammed, you guys. Like.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Be patient and don't get angry when your packages don't come before Christmas. They're trying their best.
They are trying their best.
And I know around me, there are long lines, but people also recognize that it's not the postal worker that's in the post office. It's not their fault.
Yeah.
They would love to see.
They're trying.
Like, the post. They're trying their best.
Like, at my job, I won't say why, but we had to go to curbside recently. And it's like, we're not doing this to, like, make your life harder. There's a reason why we have to do this. Mm-hmm. And we're trying our best. Like, we're trying our best with the circumstances we were given. So that's everybody right now. We're all in weird circumstances, and everybody's just trying their best and to get through it. So pack a little extra patience.
Yes.
But back to my walk-off win. I got three free cookies and a free love seat. I'm good.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
Yay! And Maddie loves both of them.
We all love free things, don't we, folks? That's Linda's stimulus package. I don't know about that.
It probably costs more than the stimulus package.
Literally worth more than the stimulus package.
It's a nice love seat.
I was going to say, and the off topic, and we don't really talk the federal government politics, but Republicans want Trump to veto the stimulus package because
well, now they're trying to push through $2,000. They're reintroducing a new bill for $2,000, so I think maybe that's why.
Yeah, I mean,
like, oh, they okay.
AOC and Rashida Tlaib like co-wrote a COVID amendment for $2,000 checks. So we'll see. I mean, like, there's going to be a standoff about this. That will, affect, you know, my life because I am a federal employee. So if the government shuts down, then I can't work. Anyway.
Oh, no.
Way beside the
walk-off wins. We're happy. Happy.
Yeah, sorry.
Kelly and Haley, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win comprises of multiple things, but it's kind of all in the same tangent. I am officially finished with all of my programming at the library for the year.
Yay! And
I won't lie. It was kind of, we all had to adapt to different circumstances for the pandemic. So I went entirely virtual and learning the software and how to edit and upload and all of that nonsense. But I constantly received so much support from the community, and even last night I had a 3D snowman program for the kids, and I had an email waiting in my inbox this morning saying that the woman's child loved the program and she's already thinking of other things to craft. Aww. And I had a phone call last night saying thank you for just providing this stuff. I've never seen my kids. This is the happiest my kids have been during the pandemic. And actually I got that today because I finally visited the girl I tutor. I haven't seen her in a couple months, and I got to play with them and talk to them for a little while. And their mother said, oh my God, this is the happiest I've seen them in a very long time. So, just having such successful programming and successful interactions with the community really has not just boosted my confidence, but really improved my general mood towards this year. So that is my walk-off win. The community I am in is amazing. Parents are fantastic. So are families, and so are the kids. That's my walk-off win.
Oh, no, that's great. It's always good to hear things like that, because you usually hear the complaints, not the good stuff.
Yeah, and like I am just so touched that the parents take the time out to say that to me. Because I know, like, the first thing people go to are the negative reactions. So I've I've honestly received so much positive feedback, and it really makes me thrilled that so many families are getting so much out of what I and my other coworkers are doing. So yes, that's my walk-off win.
Yeah, I mean, our communities are, you know, really important right now. We need to hold those close because
we're all going through this together.
Exactly.
And we need to treat it like a team sport because it is.
Yes. So Allison, what is your walk-off win?
My walk-off win is that Michael and I picked up a bunch of supplies from local DC retailers in preparation for our holiday at home this year. We are not traveling for Christmas, and we are staying here. We are Zooming each of our families, but we decided to bring some cheer into our lives and make it feel special by picking up some stuff from local places. So we picked up the other day, we picked up beer from one of the local breweries, curbside pickup. We picked up a holiday box of donuts from the local donut shop, DC Donuts, which is fantastic. We picked up bagels from the bagel place down the street. And we picked up to celebrate because Michael's break started today, winter break from school.
Yay!
So he's officially off for a couple weeks now. I only have like the official holidays off, but that's okay. I don't mind. So we picked up sandwiches from the deli down the street, the really delicious deli down the street for lunch today. So we just picked up all of our like holiday supplies to treat ourselves during the holiday and make it feel special, thanks and support small businesses. So I feel really grateful that we were able to do that. And I'm just really grateful that even though Christmas is going to be a little different than each of us are used to, that we can spend it together and that we are able to Zoom our families and that it'll still be, you know, very nice. And I am grateful for that and for the love in my life and everyone's health. So just that in general. And then I kind of have a second walk-off win, which is that I am really pumped out of my mind about the COVID vaccine. the fact that there is, even though like, I think people have, there are kind of two ends of the spectrum that are both wrong in my view about this. There's the one end of the spectrum that is like, obviously the anti-vax end of the spectrum that obviously I'm not going to go into a whole rant about this, especially not during what is supposed to be a happy segment. But there, I mean, in some cases, the distrust of the medical community is completely understandable. But in other cases, it's not, honestly. And so, you know, there's that end of the spectrum, but there's also the other end of the spectrum, which is just like, I'm going to get the shot in my arm and then I'm going to go back to normal life. Like everything is fine. I think people have a misunderstanding of how that timeline is going to be. And people need to understand that just because you are immunized and you probably won't get COVID doesn't mean that you can go back to, that we can all go back to normal life, because we need to achieve herd immunity first in order to stop community spread of COVID-19. So we kind of have to hold the horses on like opening up everything immediately. But the fact that there is a light at the end of the tunnel is still really, really nice. People have already received the vaccine. In fact, there was a live stream as part of my work day today. I got to watch the live stream of Francis Collins and Anthony Fauci getting the COVID vaccine, along with frontline NIH clinical staff at the clinical center. So the first round of NIH employees have received the shot today. I think they got the Moderna shot. And so it's just exciting that even though it's still long from over, there's at least a light at the end of the tunnel now, whereas there was not before. And the fact that how hard these scientists worked to get this done is, like, it's beyond the scope of imagination that they've managed to develop this vaccine in this time period. It's honestly astounding. It is a feat of modern medical science. And I remain in awe of them. It's really good stuff. And I think what people don't understand about this vaccine is that not only is it great that obviously it will, you know, do its part to end this current pandemic, it will change how we do vaccines going forward. The new technology in this vaccine will be the basis for probably every new vaccine moving forward.
Yay, the mRNA.
Yeah, the mRNA vaccine is the new gold standard now. If this proves to be as effective as it was in trials, It will be the new gold standard for vaccine technology. And that is truly incredible. And it will make other vaccines easier to develop in the future, which is awesome.
Now, not only that, I was speaking with a pediatric nurse last night about it. And she's like, she was so excited about the mRNA aspect of it just because it would, I think she was saying that it would negate the need for like other, elements that would be used to preserve or surround. From what I understand, I'm not a medical expert. I'm just trying to like think about what she said, like other, I guess, preservatives, like aluminum. I don't know what goes into a vaccine, but this would negate some of the aspects that people might fear or people take issue with. So she was just very excited about that.
Yeah, she's like, right. Yay. She's right. Previous vaccines. So previous vaccines usually required some sort of live or attenuated virus. So if in the case of like coronavirus, it would either be like a little bit of the actual virus or an attenuated version, they call it, which means it's the virus, but it's not quote alive, so to speak. It's like a dead form of the virus. Yes. Because your body needs to build up immunity to the components of the virus, right? Specifically the spike proteins. If you guys have seen pictures of the coronavirus in cartoon or like microscope form, it has those little spiky things pointing out of it. Those are the spike proteins, and that's what it uses to get inside your cells and infect you. So that's what your antibodies are reacting against when you're building immunity to the virus. What the amazing thing about mRNA technology is that mRNA is basically the building block that the virus uses to make those spike proteins. So it's the sequence of the viral DNA, but it's RNA, because you know the central dogma of biology that you learned in ninth grade, right? It's DNA is the template, and then it makes the messenger RNA, the molecule that the ribosome then uses to transcribe it into proteins, make it into those spike proteins. So basically, it's taking the messenger, the nucleic acid, and it is putting that in the vaccine instead. So it's
the ribonucleic acid.
You don't need the actual live or attenuated virus anymore. So it's no longer a biological. It is just straight up like synthesizing nucleic acids, which we've already known how to do for a really long time. And it's a hell of a lot easier to do than getting live virus into a vaccine. Yes. And it's safer. And it's easier to distribute. Like, the list goes on and on. You don't need as many preservatives, like Kellyanne was mentioning, her nurse friend said to her. You don't need all these preservatives. It's much, much easier to just synthetically produce these mRNA molecules, and then your body builds up the immunity to the spike proteins, because it's the sequence it uses to make the spike proteins. It's very cool stuff, you guys. Science!
Yay!
Science!
Yay, science! So I'm just very psyched about the COVID vaccine, because not only does it mean a light at the end of the tunnel, it's just super, it allows me to nerd out, because it's like a completely revolutionary way of doing vaccines, and it's very cool. So I'm very psyched. And I'm psyched that they've been so effective. 95% effective is pretty good, you guys.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm glad to see that thus far.
Oh, and one more caveat while I get on my scientist soapbox. One more small caveat. There's been a lot of things going around the news lately about new like variants of the virus that have mutated, which is freaking people out, because as you guys know, the ability, how often you need booster shots or need a new vaccine depends on how fast the virus mutates, right? So like flu, for example, mutates a lot, and it mutates, like we need a new vaccine every year. That's why you always have to get the flu shot every year. And there's like a lot of stuff coming out about how there's like new coronavirus variants in England that have a lot of mutations in them. So it's freaking people out about the like lasting power of the vaccine and thinking, oh,
but it's not on the main protein, is from what I'm talking out of my butt right now. But from what it is, it's that the main protein that the vaccine kind of is based on is not affected by this right now.
Exactly.
So the vaccine covers what's there right now.
Exactly. So don't freak out yet. That's not to say that it, like, that's not to say that the shot will definitely last forever and ever. We still don't know. But don't freak out about these new viruses. The spike protein sequence is still the same or almost the same. And so the shot should still be effective against those. The reason why flu, for example, is a lot tougher is because you guys might know when they name the flu vaccines, they call them like H1N1. It's because they have two different spike proteins at the same time, and those have numbers. And so that's why, and there can be different combinations of them. And that's why it's so hard to vaccinate against. Whereas coronavirus just has this one same spike protein. So like when you see the different flu numbers, like H2N9, that's one I made up. I don't know if there's one that exists like that, but I'm not a virologist, sorry. But like, it means that there's the H is the second one and the N is the ninth one. There are two different proteins happening at the same time, and they're both different variants. So that's why there's so many different flu vaccines and so many different flu strains. It's because of the spike proteins. Fun facts. So, yay! I need to turn this into a science lesson, but that is my walk-off win. It's just bunkering down at home, but grateful for it because we have our local DC treats and our families virtually, and grateful for the COVID vaccine. So that.
But still, wear your masks, wash your hands.
Yes, wear your masks, wash your hands, please. So I hope everyone has a wonderful holiday, whatever that means for you this year. You know, we should all be grateful for the things that we have this holiday season and remember that that is the spirit of the holiday season. Yes. And we will get through this. It will be okay. So I hope everyone has a wonderful holiday. We will be back in the new year, and our next episode is the 69th episode. So it is a very nice episode of the pod, and therefore we will have a very special show in store for you. I won't ruin it yet, but it's gonna be pretty freaking awesome, so keep an eye out on our Twitter for details on that. In the meantime, you can go to amazingavenue.com, check out all of our fantastic content. We're on top of all these off-season rumors. Anytime there's a signing, we're on top of it immediately. We have editorials on all the various things that the Mets could continue to do to improve their team, and we have morning news posts every day as always, so you should check out all of that. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow this show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own, and you can follow Linda and I on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
I'm Linda Cerevich.
And you can find Kellyanne in the Amazing Avenue comments. You should subscribe to this podcast and all of our other suite of pods if you have not already. Please subscribe to Amazing Avenue Audio on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts from. Rate and review the podcast. It really helps people find the show. The intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting. Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
And Happy New Year 2021. Get here quickly.
Get here quickly.